Okay, good morning, everyone. I just made it a little warm. Okay, good morning. We'll hopefully master our seating situation eventually. We'll get it. This is better. It's a little better. No, I like this better also. Okay, so what I want to do today is Perek Mem Tes, 49 of Tehillim, which some of the males will be familiar with because it's recited most prominently at a funeral home, at a Shiva house, as you'll see in a second why. It's not the most uplifting paragraph of Tehillim that we've ever read, but in many respects, it's very eye-opening and jarring. It's not one of those that I would suggest reading every day because it might be a little somber. And yet, on the other hand, if understood properly, which hopefully we will aspire for, it will be very inspirational. So that's my goal today, is not to depress people, but to uplift people and to refocus people and to recalibrate our moral compasses as we go forward into our day and into our week. And again, as I said last week, every week we, you know, each Perek Tehillim has slightly different themes to it. Some are more uplifting, some have to do with Israel, some have more relationship to us personally. So this is a very personal Perek of Tehillim, and it's a very jarring Perek of Tehillim. It talks about, if I had to summarize in one line what this paragraph was talking about, I would say it's, you can't take it with you, right? That is a penny. All right, so that which we have is fleeting, can't take it with you. And ultimately, again, the goal is not to be depressing, but the goal is to appreciate, and again, to recalibrate how we spend our time, how we spend our days. Certainly here, we're going to talk a lot about how we utilize our money and our material possessions. And again, that's the paragraph we're going to discuss today. So let's jump right in. And you see, you have a packet in front of you. Those who don't have a packet, there should be more going around. But we're going to see some of the other sources as well today. This is the last of the prakim of Tehillim that's attributed to the children of Korach. In each parak of Tehillim, I believe that is significant. None more so than this parak itself. So as we study and as we learn, what I want you thinking about is why specifically did the children of Korach say this parak of Tehillim? What was it in response to? What were they concerned about? Again, that'll be what we're going to come to at the end. But just let that linger in the back of your mind. Okay? Shimuzos kol amim azinu kol yoshvei chaled. It begins with about a four pasuk introduction. Shimuzos kol amim. Listen, all of the nations, all of the people. Hazinu kol yoshvei chaled. Listen up, all of the yoshvei chaled. What's yoshvei chaled? So here it translates it as the inhabitants of the world. What does that mean? Inhabitants of the world. So Rashi says, Chalad, hu haaretz. That's the land. Hi haaretz, excuse me. Al shem shehi noshenet v'chaluda. Okay? Which means what? Yeah, translate that. I got a good laugh out of you. It's rusty. It's rusty. What happens to rust? Last night, I was talking to my wife, and she looks down. She says, is the bottom of our floor, like, totally eroded? So I was like, no, that can't be. And then I touched it, and my finger literally like went like right through the wood. So apparently the bottom of my floor is all eroded. So what happens? Rust, right? What happens to it? It deteriorates. It wears out. It doesn't last forever. So says Rashi, what's it? Chaled? What does it mean that the Yoshvei Chaled, why is this world referred to as rusty? Because it doesn't last forever. It wears out. Then Rashi continues to say, maybe I'll get another laugh out of you for this one, right? Rashi says, "V'rabosenu perishu al shem ha'chulda." What's a chulda? A rat. A rat. Right? Penny had a snake. Maybe, please God, we won't go up to rats soon. Okay, but a rat. What is a rat? So what does a rat do? I know, Boca Raton. Thank you. We live in the mouth. She ate her coffee this morning. We live in the mouth of the rat. But what does a rat do? There's a phrase. We have a phrase in English. A pack rat, right? Isn't that a phrase? So pack rat means you hoard. Okay, you hoard. And that both of those symbolisms are uniquely important for this parak of Tehillim. Right? Hazinu kol yoshvei chaled. We refer to this world as both rusty, because as we'll see, we will talk about the temporal, ephemeral nature of the world that we live in, but also chaled, this notion of hoarding. People who hoard more than they actually need. And it's that focus on material possessions that we are going to be talking about a lot. So that's all in the world. Word, Kol Yoshvei Chaled, the people who live in this world. Pasuk Gimel. Gam b'nei Adam, gam b'nei Ish, man. Oh, I left it in my office. Gam b'nei Adam, gam b'nei Ish, Yachad Ashir V'Yavion. Again, this is all the introduction where he's calling everyone together. Adam, Ish, Ashir, Vevyon, wealthy, poor, everyone come. What's Adam and Ish? What's the difference between those two terminologies? So Rashi says that Adam is Avraham, who is called an Adam, and Ish is Noach, who is an Ish Tzadik. Rav Hirsch, and I left it in my office, but Rav Hirsch says, now what are we talking about here, Adam and Ish? He says, I forgot exactly which one it is. One refers to someone with Yichus, and the other is someone that does not have any yichus. In other words, don't think that just because you have yichus, this conversation doesn't apply to you. And don't think just because you don't have yichus, it means you have no relationship to this conversation. In and of itself, I believe it's a very empowering and important idea. Right? We define so much by yichus, but he's saying, whether you have yichus or no yichus, this conversation is equally important to you. What I also find important about this pasuk is he calls together Ashir ve'Evyon, the wealthy and the poor. Why is that going to be so important? Because again, we're going to be talking about material wealth here in a little bit. And you might think that depending on whether you are wealthy or poor, this conversation doesn't apply to you. And yet, as we'll see momentarily, he's going to argue that it applies equally to no matter what class, no matter what your tax bracket exists as. Okay, so Gam b'nei Ish, Gam b'nei Adam, Gam b'nei Ish, Yachad Ashir ve'Evyon, everyone come together. Pi yedaber chachmos, my mouth is going to speak wisdom. Ve'agos libi tvanos, hagust is machshavot, right? My kavanas, my mindset. Metzudas David says, machshavot libi, heima divrei tivuna, even that is going to speak wisdom to you. Pasuk hey. Atel mashal azni. Pay close attention to this mashal, to this parable that I'm about to tell you. Eftach bichinur chidati. And again, I'm going to begin telling you about the music of my lyre, whatever, however that's translated. Okay, so that pasuk 1-5 is all the introduction. I believe peppered into that introduction is foreshadowing what our parak of Tehillim is going to be about, both because of the reference of Yoshvei Chaled. That word chaled, I think, is incredibly important. And the fact that he specifically calls the ashir and the evyon, the wealthy and the poor. And he says, pay close attention to this. It's a nice way of saying, listen up. Now we go. Pasuk vav. Lama ira bimeira, avon akevai yesubeni. Lama ira bimeira. Why should I fear in times of trouble? Avon akeva yisubeni, as the sins of my ankle surround me. So what are we talking about here? This is an incredibly important pasuk. What's the bimei ra? What are the days of evil, the days of wickedness that I'm supposedly about to be afraid of? So Radak says, what we're talking about here is this world versus the next world. Radak says, lama ira bimei ra? Why should I fear the yimei ra? Sheheim yimei olam hazeh. This is talking about this world. Kihem ra lekol misasek bam. Because this world is bad, says the Radak. How is this world bad? Right? Would you characterize this word as bad? So if you look at page number 2 of the packet that I gave you, I want to recharacterize this word a little bit. And it's based on a comment of the Mesilas Yesharim of Moshe Chaim Lutzato, right in the first chapter of his Mesilas Yesharim, where he writes the following. We'll read it in the English. The Holy One, blessed be He, has put man in a place where the factors which draw him further from Hashem are many. In other words, we know that we are comprised of two existences. We have what the Baal HaTanya calls our nefesh bahamis. We have our animal side of us, and we also have the nefesh alokis, the chelak aloka mimal. We have a part of godliness to us. Our guf is our physicality. Our neshama is our spirituality, right? We existed before we had a body, and we will exist after we have a body. That's our neshama. It's eternal. It's internally connected to Hashem. When the neshama comes down into our guf, so the neshama isn't extracting itself from a purely spiritual existence, and it's connecting itself to a physical existence. Now that's beautiful for the neshama because it means that it can elevate itself, right? Through our physical mitzvos and Torah, we have the ability to elevate the neshama far beyond what would exist had it not come into the world. But it also means that if we do the wrong thing, we can distance ourselves from Hashem. Okay? Says the Mesilas Yesharim that we are placed in this world where there are many factors which distance us. Hamarchikin oso mimenu yisbarach. There are many things that distance from us from Hashem. And what are those? Those are taivos hachamrios asherimi mashech achareim. There are physical desires or earthly desires where if we pursue them, it takes us away from Hashem. And that's the battle that's constantly raging inside every one of us 24/7 all the days of our lives. Is that our guf, our body, is drawing us towards earthly matters and our neshama is aspiring for spiritual matters. If you think of it in terms of a candle, it makes sense, right? You have the wick, you have the base of the candle, which is wax, it's physical. You have a wick, and then the flame, what is the flame doing? It's dancing off it, it's aspiring, it's going higher, right? It's trying to extract itself from the physical candle. And that's kind of the dynamic that exists inside of each one of us. We have a body, and our body is drawn to the world. That's its natural inclination. And we also have a neshama. We have a soul, we have a spirit, which is trying to draw us to Hashem. And those two are in constant conflict. And the more you nurture one, the more successful you'll be, and it'll be harder to nurture the other. So if we're constantly nurturing our bodies, but we don't properly nurture our souls, so our soul is going to be so minimized, it'll always be there, but it'll be so minimized that our entire focus will be on the physical world. The more we focus on spirituality, through Torah, through mitzvah, through chesed, through all of the mechanisms that Hashem gave us, it becomes easier to conquer your physical and physicality, and it becomes easier to connect to spirituality. That's kind of the mechanism and the way that Hashem orchestrates the world around us. And then he says here the following. He says, for all the affairs of the world, ki kol inyanei olam, everything that exists in this world, bein latov, bein lamutav, whether it's for good or for bad, hinehim nisyonos la'adam, it is a test for every single one of us. And here's the key line, I think. He'ani mitzad echad, ve'aosher mitzad echad. Everyone is constantly being tested in this world. Whether you are rich or whether you are poor, you're being tested. And he goes on to explain, poverty has its obvious tests in nisyonos involved in it, right? It's very hard to be poor, to sustain yourself. You have to work harder. You don't have as much free time. It's harder to focus on family. It's hard to make time for learning, right? Wealth is also a test. Marba nechasim, marba daiga. The more money you have, more money, more worries, right? If you're worrying about your portfolio and the next deal, that also takes you away from this world. So the Mesilas Yesharim writes, everything in this world is a test. And we're constantly battling. And he says at the end, he calls us a ben chayil, which means we are all warriors. V'yinatzach ha-milchamam, he calls it tzadim. And our job in this world is to literally do battle with that constant conflict between our body on the one hand and our neshama on the other hand. And we are warriors in that battle. Our job is to be victorious because we are servants of Hashem. That, I believe, is what the Pasuk is telling us in Pasuk 6, right? Lama ira bimeira. Why should I fear of these yimeira? We said the yimeira, according to the Radak, is talking about olam hazeh. It's talking about this world. It doesn't mean that this world is bad. It means that it has opportunities for bad. Right? If we allow ourselves to become enveloped by this world, then yes, it can become bad. And he says here, the Radak continues, v'lama edag ala osher v'ala kinyan shem kavod olam hazeh. Why should I worry about this world, says the Radak? Kein ma'ase ba'olam haba v'sham yisuvenu avon kelo onesh, kloma onesh ma'asai, shesamachti betova. Right, so he says, the Radak says that when we're talking about this pasuk, is about this world versus the next world. Lama yira bimeira, in times of trouble, why should I fear, right, this world? Avon akeva yisuvenu, the sins of my akev surround me. What are the sins of my akev? So that's pshat, right? That my sins follow me. It's not what Rashi says. Rashi says, "Shavon akeva yisuveni, avonot sheani dash beekev." Right? Ekev asher. Right? The parsha of Ekev. What do we talk about?
The heel.
The heel. And Rashi over there says that there are certain mitzvos which we trample on with our heels. And what does that mean? It means that we have big mitzvos. Right? Shabbos is a big mitzvah. We all know about Shabbos. Right? There are certain mitzvos that are big mitzvos. And then there are the mitzvos that, like, we have to hedge, you know, it's a cost-benefit analysis in our minds subconsciously. Like, we can't put full effort into everything all the time, so we choose the big ones. And the smaller mitzvos and the smaller averos, we kind of choose to ignore. So Parshas Ekev reminds us that those mitzvos that we choose to ignore, that we trample on, because they're unimportant to us, tishmun. We should even listen to those mitzvos. That's what Rashi says is happening here. Avon akeva yisubeni. Ha-mitzvos shani mizalzel behem. The mitzvos that I don't even pay attention to. Shehem be'inai averos kalos. Because they're like not important. You know what's a great example of this? Like Lashon Hara. Right? Lashon Hara, okay, you know. I keep Shabbos, but, you know, I'm not so great at Lashon Hara. So that's what says Rashi, right? Those averos, which are kalos be'inai. In other words, it's not a big deal. Marshios osi badin. V'chein kol ha'ashirim. What's marshios osi badin, says Rashi? In other words, those testify me in my moment of judgment. And so says Rashi, what's this lama ira bimeira? It's not talking about this world versus the next world. It's talking about the day of judgment. Why should I fear the day of judgment when avon akeva yisubeni? When the sins of my heels are surrounding me, and all those sins which I didn't even notice because they were so insignificant to me in this world, all of a sudden, they're surrounding me all around. Pasuk Zayin. Habotchim al chelam uvarov ashram yishalalu. Habotchim al chelam, they have boteach, they have bitachon, they have faith in their wealth. Uvarov ashram yishalalu. And they are praised and they see glory and honor through their riches. Okay, so these are people, says the Bnei Korach, the children of Korach, habotchim al chelam. They take comfort, they take trust in their wealth. What are they trusting in their wealth? What does that mean, that they take trust in their wealth?
If they're so rich, so...
Well, they assume that if they're so rich, then... That's eternality, right? In other words, if I'm rich, then I can buy myself eternality. I mean, that's essentially what the pasuk is driving at here. And what we're setting ourselves up for is obviously the emphasis that it's not the wealth that you could take forever, but it's other values that are going to carry with us into the world to come. So aborchim al chelam, they trust in their wealth. Uvarov ashram yishalalu. What does that mean? Uvarov ashram yishalalu. Their glory is in their wealth, or their praise is in their wealth. So if you turn to page number 3 of the packet I gave you, it was worth coming just to see this idea. And we've said it outside in the past, but I want to see it with you inside because I think it's that important. Again, the Pasuk in Tehillim says, Uvarov ashram yishalalu, that their wealth, they praise themselves. Says Rav Huttner in his Pachad Yitzchak in the very first chapter of his Sefer on Purim. He says here, the Pasuk says, Ish lefi mahalalo, that a person is according to that which he praises. Right? That's the underline at the top of the page. Says Rav Huttner 4 lines down from the top right hand side. People are judged, or they're recognized, through that which they praise. This is how Rabbeinu Yon explains it. A person is judged based on what he praises. And this is the language. If a person is constantly praising righteous people and good actions, teida uvachanta ki ish tovu, that's how you know that he's a good person and that he's a tzaddik. V'im yitachin sheish b'yado avonos nistarim, he might not be a perfect person, but if he praises righteousness, then at least you know he's a good person. And on the flip side, he says, if a person praises evil, he praises the wrong things, then even if he's doing mitzvos, you know he's miscalibrated. What's his proof? He says such a powerful imagery in my middle underline. He says, Yitachin shelefaneinu shnei bnei adam. It's possible that we have in front of us two people. We'll call them Ruvain and Shimon. Ha'echad, Ruvain, Osek b'Torah b'shkeda v'asmada Ruvain is in Kolel all day. V'ashenu enu klal begeder shel osek mitzvos. And Shimon barely has time for learning, didn't grow up with a Jewish background, has nothing. Avalu matzeh motzimanu etzel arishon. Tenuos shel hisbatlus b'shash nichnasei lavasher gadol. But when Ruvain is sitting in a room, and a really wealthy person comes into the room, he gets like all excited. He gets googly eyes, his eyes light up, and he's standing up. He's giving him kavod, right? But if a great Rebbe comes into the room, so he's not impressed, right? Not impressed. On the other hand, Shimon, again, who has no Jewish background, can't learn Gemara, doesn't learn in yeshiva, and yet for him, when the wealthy person comes into the room, he's like, okay, right? And yet when a Talmud Chacham comes into the room, he jumps up with excitement and alacrity and runs to help the person. We have a class here, right? whatever you want. Right? So he says, that defines, I'm sorry, that was a little rude. I should have let him come through. So that defines the person. Ish lafi mahalo. A person is judged by what they praise, right? Do we have on our walls pictures of athletes and celebrities, or do we have on our walls people who are righteous? Right? What gives us? What are we praising? What are we praising? I had this. Oh, I shouldn't say, because if she ever finds out, she'll be mad at me. Oh, I'll say it anyways, because she's not going to listen to it. So, my in fourth grade in Hillel, you have to do a biography, right? Where you have to research a personality, and it's very creative and clever, and they dress up like them, and it's a really fun program. And I remember when my son did it, it's like one of the thrills of the year. So my daughter comes home last night, and it's first come, first serve. So she loves art and she loves science, but all the good people were taken. So she said, like, the only book left was a book about a certain celebrity. So my wife and I gave each other a look, and we're like, okay, how are we going to get out of this one? So we told her, we're like, maybe we'll keep on looking around because, you know, like, again, she's going to be studying about this personality and kind of like putting herself, it's not the person I want her to aspire to be. Anyways, later that night, they have Rebbetzin Machlis, who, what? She passed away, right? But they wrote a book about her. And they translated that book into a teenage version of it. Okay, and Art Scroll did it. It's a wonderful job. So anyways, my wife and my daughters have been reading that book for the last couple of months. Anyways, they're reading it last night. I'm at the table. And all of a sudden, my daughter perks up. And she goes, I know. Why don't I do my biography about Rebbetzin Machlis? And I was like, thank God. I was like, at least the mother's doing something right. So then she got all excited about it. So then she's like, well, maybe the teacher won't allow. I'm like, let me tell you, the teacher's going to allow you to. If I have anything to say about it, the teacher's going to allow. But why did that matter so much to me? Because if this is someone who my daughter's going to be excited about, and she's going to be aspiring to be like, and she's going to be dressing up as, and she's going to be doing research about, I'd rather do someone about values that I want her to represent and aspire to. And let's just say this celebrity didn't make that list. But that's exactly what Rav Hunder is talking about. Ish lafi mahalo, a person is judged, not necessarily by the knowledge that they know, but it's judged by what you praise. What do you give chashivas to? What do you give importance to? Do we give importance to baseball players and basketball players and celebrities and singers? Or are we giving importance? We have Rav Schechter coming to our community in 2 weeks. Is there going to be that same excitement about Rav Schechter coming to our community as there is when we had, I don't want to disparage anyone, when we had other celebrities, secular celebrities come to our community? Right? That's Ish Lafi Mahalo. And where are your values driven by? So that's what I think the Pasuk here is telling us in Zion. Habochim al chelam, right? They trust in their wealth. Uvarov ashram yishalalu. What are they praising? They're praising their wealth. They're praising their money. We've all been at Shabbos tables where sometimes you're listening to someone and you're like, I'm going to throw up if I hear about your new car again. Or I'm going to throw, right? Ish lafi mahalalo. Uvarov ashram yishalalu. These people, all they do all day is they praise their wealth. And again, the perek here is setting us up for the next part. Ach lo fada yifteish. A person, what's podeh, pidyon? They can't redeem themselves with money. Lo yitain le'elohim kafro. And you know what you can't do, says the Perek HaTehillim? You can't bribe Hashem. Right? You can't buy off Hashem. Lo yitain l'Elohim kafro means you can't pay off Hashem. You can't bribe Hashem. You can't buy yourself. Olam haba, you can't buy eternality. In other words, your money might be helpful now, but it ain't going to buy you where you're going to ultimately want to go. V'yekar pidyam nafsham v'chadal le'olam. V'yekar pidyam nafsham. It's too expensive. Yekar, like yakar. It's expensive, pidyo nafsham. No matter how much money you have, you're not going to be able to redeem your soul. V'chadal le'olam. Chadal means ceases, right? It ceases for eternity. In other words, no matter how much money you have, there's ultimately going to be a stopgap to that, right? You're not going to be able to buy yourself into the world to come. It's going to be too expensive, even the wealthiest of wealthy. V'chi od la'netzach, right? Shall we live eternity? Lo yireh ha'shachat. Are we ultimately not going to all face the same physical demise? Ki yireh chachamim yamusu. Yachad ksil vavar yovedu. Even the chachamim, even the most righteous, even the smartest, ultimately pass away. Ve'azvu la'cherim chelam. And they leave their wealth. What does that mean? Right? They leave their wealth to others. In other words, again, that same notion that you can't take it with you. Look at the last page of your packet, how Rav Hirsch describes this sequence of psukim. He says the following. The psalmist now speaks of those who know no fear because they have faith in Hashem, not because they have faith in Hashem, but because they place their trust in their material possessions. They measure the value of their lives, that is, the emanation of their personalities, only in terms of the abundance of their tangible wealth, right? They measure themselves according to their wealth. They use their possessions only for selfish purposes and not as a means toward the end of fulfilling their duty. In other words, wealth in and of itself, says Rav Hirsch, is not the enemy here. The enemy here is how you use your wealth. We all know enormously wealthy people who are generous, who are charitable, who do amazing things with their wealth. That, says Rav Hirsch, is why Hashem gave people wealth. That's the famous Gemara with Rabbi Akiva and Turnus Rufus, where Turnus Rufus says, I understand, why did Hashem make some people wealthy and some people poor? Why didn't Hashem create socialism, right? Everyone equal. So Rabbi Akiva looks back at him, he says, no, you're missing the point. In other words, the whole purpose of why people have wealth and is to create this society where people can help one another out. Right? He says, so just because you're wealthy and someone else is poor doesn't mean you have an advantage over them. It means you have an obligation towards them. You have a responsibility towards them. It's no different than any other gift you and I have been given. If you have a gift to speak, it means you have an obligation to use that gift to spread Hashem for a Kiddush Hashem. If you have a gift as a doctor, it doesn't just mean that you're a doctor because you want to make money. It means you have an obligation, you have a responsibility. Wealth, says Rav Hirsch, is the exact same thing. Wealth, money is not the enemy here. It's how you use the wealth. Are you using it for your own will or are you using it to help other people? They fail to employ their riches to free their fellow men from want and care and so neglect to pay Hashem the ransom due for their own souls. Right? He reinterprets the pidyo nafsho. It means that we have to ransom our souls. What does that mean? Hashem gave us money. And the way that I ransom my soul is by giving up of that money and using it for good. Their own happiness is too precious for them. But people who keep it to themselves, they're only interested in their own happiness. And they have scant concern for the welfare of others. They don't care about other people. They love their money more than they do their own souls. That's how we translate, right? B'chol nafshecha u'v'chol me'odecha, with all of your money. And says the Gemara, how can you compare someone who is asked to give their life with someone who's asked to give up money? The answer is that for some people, they value money more than they value their own souls. This comment of Rav Hirsch was so prescient, because what does he say? Their happiness is too precious for them, and that they're not caring about the welfare of other people. If you remember, in Elul, we did a class here, those who are at BRS, about the second mountain, a book by David Brooks, which again I can't endorse because of the end of the book where he describes his pseudo-conversion to Christianity, but the beginning of the book is really Jewish. In the beginning of the book, he talks about that they're mountains that people climb in their life, and that at various points in our lives we're climbing a first mountain, which is about ambition in creating a name for ourselves and developing wealth. And he says, then you hit a valley. And the valley causes you to reflect and reevaluate, and then you go up that second mountain. And it's exactly this comment of Hirsch. The first mountain, you're concerned about your own happiness. Think about American society nowadays. The buzzword in America nowadays is happiness. Everyone, read all these self-help books. It's all about the pursuit of my own happiness. And yet, as Brooks articulates and refers to what he says here, you ultimately come to the recognition that your happiness isn't found in accumulating, but your happiness is found in connection, in sharing, in giving. So that's what Hirsch says. Their own happiness is too precious for them. And they don't have concern for other people. But what happens if your happiness is dependent on that? It's fleeting. It's not going to be significant, right? They cannot bring themselves to redeem their souls from that destruction, which shall be the fate of those whose lives have been devoted only to selfish gains and pleasures. In thanksgiving for their prosperity, they should have given some contribution commensurate with their wealth and ability toward the advancement of the welfare of the fellow man, but they have sadly failed to do so. In other words, Hashem gave us this gift. You want to thank Hashem for the gift of wealth and affluence? Don't keep it to yourself. Share it with other people. That's how you thank Hashem, right? And that's what Hashem wants from us. Because they have neglected this duty, v'chadal nafsham le'olam, because they have misused their wealth, therefore their soul shall cease to be. They have nothing to ensure the perpetuation of their souls for all the times to come. Right? If you misuse the gifts that Hashem gives you, then v'chadal nafsham le'olam, then you cease to be. Okay, I think it's a beautiful interpretation of the psukim that we just read. Pasuk Yud Beis. And again, I hope you're seeing, as we develop these psukim, why this is read at a funeral home, right, a shiva house, why this is read around the time of death, because ultimately, right, this is what we're talking about. But again, I'm not going to leave you depressed, I promise. Pasuk Yud Bet, 12. Kirbam batemo leolam. Kirbam, says the Mitzudas David, yachshavu bekerav libam. They believe in their hearts, asher bateim tiskayim leolam. They believe that their houses are going to last forever. Right, that their material possessions are going to last forever. Mishkenosam l'dor v'ador, and again, their dwelling places are going to be for eternality. Karu bishmosam alei adamos, they call their name on this earth. In other words, they think just because they have a big house, people will remember them forever. That just because they had a lot of wealth, people are going to remember them for generations to come. And yet, pasuk 13, ve'adam bikar bal yalin, a person does not live, bikar means, in his honor. A person doesn't live in his honor, right? Just because you have a lot of money and therefore people give you a lot of kavod, that's not where you're going to live. Nimshal kabehimos nidmu. You're no different, he says, in very stark terms, to an animal, right? In other words, again, it's that same idea that you can't take it with you. And in that regard, we're no different than animals. You can't take the kavod and you can't take the honor. The fools speak about what's going to happen after they die lovingly. They'll talk about their eternality. They're talking about that people will remember them for years to come. They are like sheep that are going to their death. In other words, just as we think we are in charge and we ultimately realize we are not, in that regard, says the children of Korach, we are just like sheep. Sheep are not in charge. They are being led. So we, too, are being led by Hashem. Lo, again, we are being guided by the righteous ones who will rule over us. Ach Elohim yifden avshi, Pasuk 16. Only Hashem can redeem our souls. Miyad sha'ol ki kachin yisela. Remember, who previously couldn't redeem our souls? What wasn't able to redeem our souls? Money. Money couldn't. But you know who can, he says in Pasuk 16? It's Hashem who is able to redeem our souls. Ki kachin yisela. That's what we can ultimately take with us. On this, the Ibn Ezra says, Kvar hizkarti b'sefer ki ha-nefesh ve'ha-neshama ve'ha-ruach shem echad l'nishmas adam. The Ibn Ezra says, I've already told you, we have something called a neshama. Ha-omed la'ad v'lo tamus. And you know what's interesting about our neshama? It doesn't die. Again, that's the contrast that's being developed in this Perek of Tehillim. That there are certain things that we value in this world which are ephemeral, they're going to cease to exist. And there are certain things in this world which we fail to give chashivas to, which we fail to give importance to. And those are the things that are ultimately going to provide us with eternality, which is ultimately going to provide us with the world to come. He continues and says, Bavur shalotir la'ayin, kim im eile, bavur hayosi mishora mali ruach chachma. That's not what I was looking for. He says, Miyachol, shalo yitachin shu omer shalo yamus kishar b'nei adam, ki miyigver yichyeh v'lo yiremus. In other words, he's not telling us we're not going to die. V'zetam ki kachinu, shetidbak nishmaso b'nishama el yona, that when we do die, our nishama is going to cling to Hashem, shehi nishmas hashamayim, v'kamol ki lakach oso Elohim, v'achar kavo tikachini. That ultimately is what Hashem, I got the message, I'll turn the AC up a little bit, down a little bit. Right, that is the message which he says ultimately that's ultimately going to last forever. Again, so again, it's that contrast that's being set up the entire time. What is short living? What can't we take with us? And what can we take with us? It's that connection to Hashem. It's that which we nourish ourselves spiritually with that we can ultimately take with us. Al tira ki ashiri, she says, Pasuk 17. Don't be afraid when you see someone getting wealthy. What does that mean? It means when you see the wicked prosper, don't become discouraged. When he puts a lot of kavod, takes a lot of honor out of his house. Because when a person passes away, you can't take it with you. It doesn't go into the grave with them. As Rabbi Goldberg has referenced, and I have as well, oftentimes when he and I will go to funerals, we will spend time afterwards looking at gravestones. And it is the most eye-opening experience. I think my favorite was that one person said, like, greatest poker player, right? That was the
Jewish cemetery,
right? That was like the description. A person, I was like 96 years old, and that's what they're forever remembered, is that they had a great poker face, right? Right? And again, in other cultures, people are buried with certain things. Think about Egyptian culture and the contrast that it provided for us, where they buried them with all of their possessions because they believed that when they were resurrected, that's what they would come back with. We don't believe that, right? That's not our hashkafa. And if there's one pasuk that summarizes it most poignantly, it is verse 18, Ki lo b'moso yikach hakol. There's a beautiful song on this, which if we were in the other classroom, I would have played for you on the video, but maybe I'll send it out in an email. If you guys aren't on the list, let me know. But it's a beautiful song. And again, Tehillim was meant to be sung, not said, so I'm happy to send it to anyone. Ki nafsho b'chayav yivarech. What does that mean? Ki nafsho b'chayav yivarech. Right? Ki nafsho, his soul, b'chayav yivarech. Says Rashi, ha-rasha mevarech es nafsho b'chayav. The Rasha congratulates himself in his life. Ve'omer shalom alecha nafshi. I'm good. Right, don't worry about me. Kelo yun chashumra, because nothing's going to affect me. Nothing's going to bother me. I'm invisible. Aval acherim ain omrim alav kain. But other people look at him, and they're not saying that. Okay, so that's ki nafsho b'chayav yivarech v'yoducha ki teitiv lach tavo ador avosav anetzach lo yira or. Again, this type of person says Radak lefichach tavo anefshahim nefshos avosav. He's just like his father. Right, you ever heard that? You're just like your mother. So here it says, you're just like your father. In other words, your parent were wicked, so you're going to be just like them. You're going to end up in the same place as them. Pasuk Chavaleth, the penultimate verse of this chapter, Adam bikar velo yavin, nimshal kabehimos ninmu. Adam bikar, a person with their yikar, with their honor, lo yavin. They don't understand that. Nimshal kabehimos ninmu. They are just like animals. What pasuk is that? Almost verbatim like. Pasuk 13. Pasuk 13 read, I'll read it for you. Ve'adam bikar bal yalin nimshal kabehimos ninmu. It's the exact same pasuk, 13 and 21, with one exception. One is Adam bikar velo yalin. One is Adam bikar velo Yavin. What's the difference between Yalin and Yavin? Yalin means sleep with it, like live with it. Yavin means to
understand.
So on this, there's a beautiful interpretation, right? Yakar is that which is precious to us. In Pasuk 13, what were we talking about? We're talking about the person whose entire honor is his wealth. So there we say, Adam Bikar, that honor that you derive from wealth, Bal Yalin, you can't take that with you. And in that regard, you're just like an animal. Here, what are we talking about? We're talking about the person who is now, because we always have to end on a happy note, right? Adan Bikar, what's the Yakar? What's the true honor of a person? It's not our wealth. What is it? Our neshama, our spirituality. That says the children of Korach, Lo Yavin. What don't we do? We don't understand it, right? We don't fully understand. We don't fully comprehend the riches that exist inside of us. That's the final pasuk, right? That every single one of us has an enormous amount of wealth that exists inside of us. You know what it's called? It's called that chelek elokam imal. It's called that nefesh elokis. It's called that part of Hashem. It's called the fact that we have a neshama. Ve'adam bikar. That wealth that exists inside of us, lo yavin. We don't understand it. And in that regard, nimshal kabeos ninu, because we don't understand the internal, innate wealth that every single one of us has, we end up like animals. And if we want to end up not like animals, what do we have to do? We don't have to search far. We don't have to run to the mountains and the, right, the, where's the wealth found? It's found inside every single one of us, right? Every single Jew has what we would call in common, you know, colloquial word, the pintaliyid. Every single Jew has that part of Hashem inside of us. And if we only realized that, then that's what's going to allow us to succeed and to thrive and to fly, right? The first step, says the B'nai Korach, to solving so many of these issues is simply to realize that we're not just our physical existence. We're not just our behem, our nefesh bahamas. We're not just our physical existence. But the moment that you and I recognize that we have part of Hashem inside of us, we act differently. As I learn on usually Wednesday mornings. This morning we did on Thursday. So I learned Tanya with someone in the shul. And we were learning a lot of these issues this morning. And I said to myself, I said to him, I said, you know, so interesting. I said, I know this intellectually. I said, but if you're, I'll pick on Chabad for a second. If you're a Chabadnik and you've been indoctrinated with this from like utero, so you fundamentally view the world differently, right? If you and I looked at each other, and let's just play it out for a second. If you and I looked at each other in every single Jew we ever encountered, and all we thought about the entire time is I'm talking to someone who is a manifestation of Hashem in this world, a person who has a chelek of Hashem in this world, a person who has a holy kadosh neshama. If every one of our interactions began with that basis, that foundation, we would interact with each other very differently. Right? What allows Chabad to do what they do and to genuinely love and believe in every single Jew is because they've been indoctrinated with this pasuk, Adam Bikar Velo Yavin. Certain Jews just don't understand yet the richness that they have inside of them, but they believe that if I can bring it out, then that ultimately can light that spark that's going to become a flame and hopefully a furnace, right? Part of my struggle, and I only speak personally, is I didn't grow up with that vocabulary, right? I don't think many of us did, and I don't think we do a good enough job of cultivating that vocabulary. You know, we were even wondering this morning, like, do I do a good enough job of explicitly talking to my children in that language, right? And I think that's what allows someone from Chabad, let's say, that when they bump into a Jew in the supermarket who's not affiliated, they don't see an unaffiliated Jew. They see a chelek of Hashem. They see the potential of Hashem. And that, like, fundamentally starts off the conversation in a different way. Many of you know that I'm, please God, going to be, I have to actually start training for it and stop talking about it. But eventually, I'll start training. I'm going to, please God, be running the Boston Marathon. I'm running it with Dana-Farber Cancer Center, which is a kind of like the Sloan Kettering of Boston, right? It's a prominent cancer center in Boston. So it's an amazing organization, and the more I'm learning about it, I'm enormously impressed by it, and there's a lot, I believe, actually, that synagogues can learn from their operation. But anyways, so they had a member of their board reach out to me to welcome me to the team and to kind of show me the ropes. So what's her name? She's not going to listen to this. Her name is like Julie Schwartz Shapiro, like the most Jewish sounding name ever, right? And we're talking, it was very clear she had never interacted with an Orthodox Jew, let alone an Orthodox rabbi. And like midway through the conversation, I realized to myself, like this might be the only, her only exposure to Orthodoxy, certainly her only exposure to Orthodox rabbi. And like that changed the conversation for me a little bit. A Chabad rabbi wouldn't have needed to have changed that paradigm. Like it's part of their DNA. And I think that part of what the B'nai Korach are encouraging us to do is Adam Bikar Velo Yavin. Part of what we have to start doing and do a better job of is understanding the Ikar, is understanding the preciousness that lies inside every single one of us. And if we do that, and we do a better job of that, then we won't fulfill the end of the Pasuk of Nimshal Kabei Mos Nidu. We won't exist on this world just like animals, where we're driven by temptations and desires and pieces of cake and, you know, whatever else is out there. But we're driven and we're inspired by something else. That's that Ish Lefi Mahalo. So again, I think that Pasuk at the end, Adam Bikar V'lo Yavin, kind of uplifts the whole Perek of Tehillim, because it reminds us that, you know, there are all these parables that they go to far ends of the earth to look for the wealth, but then they come back and it was sitting behind their stove the whole time. That's what we are, right? We look for happiness. We look for fulfillment. We look for all around. And yet, the B'nai Korach remind us that it's inside of us that entire time. Why B'nai Korach? Right? It's such a jarring Perek of Tehillim. It's a very somber, you know, at times, Perek of Tehillim. Why the B'nai Korach? Yeah. Correct. So what was it about their father's actions? I'm not playing on my phone. I'm looking up a pasuk because I realize I don't have a chumash with me.